Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 9th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Midland Health. Vaccinations in, around Midland, top 20K. By Stuart Doreen. The number of vaccinations administered in and around Midland have surpassed 20,000, according to Midland Health statistics. Midland Health reported that more than 1,000 have been administered every day but one, going back to January 22nd. That includes a one-day high of 2,442 on January 29th and 1,230 at the Horseshoe on Monday. Heading into Monday, Midland Health officials were reporting 19,915 vaccinations provided. It does appear too good to be true, but it is the result of behind-the-scenes planning and hard work, stated Dr. Larry Wilson, Chief Medical Officer for Midland Health, in an email with the Reporter Telegram. Let's hope we keep up the trend. Wilson said he was proud of the efforts of the Midland Health team in managing the vaccination process, including infection preventist Val Sparks, Director of Pharmacy Tim Warpola, and Basin MD Director Shari Sell Premer, along with the entire Midland Unified Command team. Midland Health and the Unified Command team have one site open for vaccination administration at the Horseshoe Complex and are preparing to open a second at the Golf Course Road Church of Christ on February 15th. Wilson mentioned that not only are there more than 1,000 vaccinations taking place in Midland each day, but vaccine is being supplied across the Permian Basin. We have done so supporting the mission of getting vaccines first to the high-risk population of 1A and 1B persons, Wilson wrote. On Tuesday, we expect to get the first allotment of second doses, and Monday, we received the allotment of first doses for this week. For now, we can continue with getting first doses out, while next week, we start the second doses as well. While more residents of Midland County are on the road to being vaccinated, Midland Health and the Midland Health Department are reporting numbers showing less COVID in the community. Those statistics include the number of active COVID patients on the critical care unit floor and on the COVID floor fell below 30 on Monday, continuing a trend of falling numbers. Midland Health reported 202 of the 284 inpatient rooms were occupied for a 71% occupied rate. Of those, 15% are for COVID patients. That is lower than the 16% seven-day average. The number of positive tests at Midland Health testing sites did increase from 119 to 130 last week. The positivity rate was still at 14.2%, one of the lower amounts going back to early October. The number of confirmed cases in Midland County dropped to 31.2% over the week to 317 last week. That was the lowest total since at least the end of October. Late week trends show that number could continue to drop this week. This article is entitled Mass Vaccinations in Midland to Continue for 3 Months, by Caitlin Randall. Mass vaccinations at the Horseshoe and Golf Course Road Church of Christ Family Center will continue for at least the next 12 weeks for individuals in phases 1A and 1B. Jamie Jewett, Assistant Emergency Operations Coordinator for the county, provided an update on COVID-19 vaccinations by Midland Health, with assistance from the County and City of Midland during a Commissioner's Court meeting on Monday. Midland Health began vaccinating individuals age 65 or older or with chronic health conditions at the Horseshoe Arena on January 22nd. Next week, it is opening a second location at the Golf Course Road Church of Christ Family Center, according to a press release. When the second location is opened, the horseshoe will be used for administering second doses of the vaccine, and the church will be used for administering first doses. Appointments are required to receive the vaccine. Midland Health CEO and President Russell Myers has said they're expecting to receive 5,000 doses of the vaccine a week for the foreseeable future. Jewett said Monday vaccinations are expected to continue for the next 12 weeks for phases 1A and 1B. She said the state has not told the county when the vaccine will open to the next phase. County commissioners on Monday approved using county funds to purchase food, drinks, and snacks for volunteers at vaccination sites. Jewett said there are about 100 volunteers helping with vaccinations. Team Rubicon, a nonprofit that assists with disaster relief, has been in Midland since mass vaccinations began to help organize the operation. The nonprofit has been receiving donations to provide food for volunteers, Jewett said. When Team Rubicon leaves in a few weeks, county funds will be used to purchase food if donations are not available. There's been considerable interest in receiving the COVID-19 vaccine from Midland Health. More than 15,000 people had signed up for the vaccine waitlist by January 26th. Those who qualify for the vaccine and wish to register for the waitlist can do so at midlandhealth.org/vaccine. This article is called Small Bites. It is entitled Shipley Donuts, Kung Fu Tea, Fat Bird Wing Bar Coming Soon by J.C. Lewis. Shipley Donuts, Kung Fu Tea, and Fat Bird Wing Bar will be coming soon in Midland. The National Donut Shop is finally coming to Midland. Shipley Donuts has a projected opening date on April 14th at 5210 West Wadley Avenue, where a Fresh Fit Meals was located. The donut shop serves more than 60 varieties of glazed, filled, and iced donuts, as well as kolaches and cinnamon rolls. The donut shop was created by Lawrence Shipley Sr. in 1936 after developing a gourmet recipe. The first Shipley Donuts shop was in Houston. Now, the franchise has more than 190 stores in Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Texas. For more information, visit shipleydonuts.com. Kung Fu Tea will be coming to Midland, located at 1220 North Midkiff Road, Suite G and H. The international chain is moving into the old Subway location. The Bubble Tea Shop will serve milk tea, punch, milk cap, classic tea, slush tea, milk strikes, and seasonal specials. There also will be vegan and caffeine-free options. The franchise has an application and a reward system. There are 37 locations in Texas already. Midland's Kung Fu Tea will be the westernmost location in Texas. For more information, visit kungfutea.com. Midlanders could soon have a new place to indulge in wings. Fat Bird Wing Bar has put up signage at 3209 Courtyard Drive. The alcohol permit for the location was approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission in 2019. Just announced. This Thursday, the Petroleum Museum is hosting a lunch and lecture event about ranching heritage and the Midland Meat Company. John Scarborough will share the history of the Scarborough family in West Texas and the founding of the Midland Meat Company. The event is free, and drinks and desserts will be provided. It starts at 11:30 a.m. The Junior League of Midland announced a virtual fundraiser, Farm to Table. The event will start on March 10th, and live broadcast will happen March 20th at 7 p.m. Attendees can join a virtual table to eat, drink, and create art. Local cuisine, craft beer, and boutique wines will be offered for the event. For more information, visit farmtotableau.com/event. Destination Midland is hosting the second Crawfish Boil and Bash competition on March 27th. The event is presented by Down South Seafood and Bayou Crawfish and Catering. Music will be by the Jesse Stratton Band. Los Crazy Guys, Dirty Glass, Hadley Joe, and DJ by Scars Entertainment. General admission and VIP access include tasting crawfish from all boil participants. Boomtown Barbecue will be in the rustic patio. The event is from 1 to 6 p.m. Tickets are $35 to $50 with a VIP option.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Tuesday, February 9th. Local briefs from staff reports. National Weather Service says high near 20, chance of snow coming. The National Weather Service is reporting a cold front is coming that will drop low temperatures into the teens and high temperatures as low as 20 degrees on Valentine's Day. The National Weather Service reports a couple of more days of 70-degree high temperatures before a front blows in and cools the air down significantly. Instead of a high of 74 degrees Wednesday, the National Weather Service is calling for a high of 47 degrees Thursday. Low temperatures will dip into the 20s on Thursday night and fall to 14 degrees by Saturday night. The high on Sunday is expected to hit 20. A high of 20 would be 42 degrees below the typical normal high temperature for February 14th and nearly 10 degrees below the record coldest high temperature on that date. It would also be the coldest high temperature for any day after February 3rd. The chances of precipitation include a 20% chance on Wednesday night and a chance of snow Sunday night and Monday. City. Confirmed cases top 16,000. Deaths up to 228. The City of Midland reported Monday that the number of confirmed cases inside Midland County has reached 16,000. The Midland Health Department is showing a case count of 16,002 through Sunday. That includes 11,083 residents who have recovered. The city also reported 4 deaths related to COVID-19. They include males in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and a female in her 70s. 2 passed away at home in December, 1 passed away in October, and another on Sunday. The city also reported that the number of deaths during the pandemic moved to 228. Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading an additional article from today out of the Austin American Statesman for this February 9th that was published earlier this afternoon at 1:19 p.m. CVS coronavirus vaccine sign-up in Texas pushed to Thursday. Here's which locations are set to receive doses. By Nicole Bielpondo, Austin American Statesman. Those seeking to receive a coronavirus vaccine at a Texas CVS are going to have to wait just a little longer. CVS locations in Texas were set to begin administering COVID-19 vaccines starting February 11th. Due to a delay in shipments, that has now been pushed to February 12th. Sign up for the vaccines was originally scheduled to start today, but has since been moved to Thursday. The chain is looking to administer 38,000 vaccines across 70 different Texas locations. The 70 initial locations will grow as more vaccines become available. To get a vaccine from CVS, you have to register in advance online at CVS.com or in the CVS app or by calling CVS customer service at 800-746-7287. CVS tells us people will be able to register for an appointment beginning February 9th. Vaccines will be given to people based on our state's eligibility criteria, which means people in the 1A and 1B categories, healthcare workers, people older than 65, or those with pre-existing conditions. CVS expects to ramp up to 20 million to 25 million shots per month. And at this point, the article continues listing the cities in Texas with CVS pharmacies that will be giving the COVID-19 vaccine. It does include Midland, but it doesn't give the location. But I have looked the Midland locations up on CVS.com. The Midland location for the CVS vaccination will be the CVS pharmacy located at 5315 Briarwood Avenue in Midland. And once again, remember, you will have to sign up before to make an appointment when the sign up becomes available, hopefully February 9th, tomorrow, because they will not be accepting walk-ins. Midland Reporter Telegram opinion page, Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. Opinion extra. Our district needs the data that STAR provides. By Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD needs to continue with its student assessments, including participation in the STAR test. There is a push, including by some officials looking to endear themselves politically to their electorate, that students don't need to take the STAR for a second straight year. They have been impacted enough, we hear. They don't need the extra pressure, someone else will say. Those are ways of looking at it. I just disagree with both. It is my expectation that the COVID pandemic has done damage to academic achievement that will take years, if not a decade, to undo. And our students, their parents, and the school district need to know where students stand now more than ever. Are students ready to move to the next grade? How far behind are they? What students are ahead of schedule? And what did they do to get there? Students will be impacted more if we choose not to pay attention to a lack of progress. Sadly, our community knows this all too well, and COVID did nothing to help our struggling district. It should scare parents of Midland ISD students that our children are struggling as much as they are. Ann Dixon recently told the board the following. The percentage of students in Midland ISD elementary schools needing reading intervention at the elementary school level is above 50%. Second graders were showing a beginning of the year score of 56, the percentage reading at or beyond grade level. The percentage of eighth graders was 36%. We need the data that the STAR tests can provide. We need to see which campuses fared well and which ones could use improvement. We need to know if there is a campus at Midland ISD that has the secret sauce so we can replicate those things it does well when applicable. If that campus happens to be a charter, like Idea Travis, it shouldn't matter. We're having serious debates about academic achievement and what makes sense for education in Midland. Our discussions now will make an impact over the years. It is time that we run toward finding a solution and not run away from the problem for reason that usually have little to do with what is taking place inside the classroom. We can't kick the can down the street any longer. Nowhere in this article is anyone talking about grading campuses this year or putting the spotlight on poor performing campuses. Therefore, the only pressure anyone puts on students will be of their doing, not that of a test. Comprehensive tests should be used to track academic performance at all schools, public or private. What would I tell my children if they said they have a such test coming up? Easy. Just do the best you can and we will deal with the results. I don't expect this article to be popular, but I have been consistent in my comments that we should offer an education that makes sense for Midland children, and the test scores and assessments will take care of themselves, like they do in the Rio Grande Valley or El Paso. Do elementary students deserve a break? Oh yeah. They deserve to be able to read at grade level and be prepared for high school. Taking an assessment will help us know if we are on track. Romney wants at least $3,000 allowance for children. By Ramesh P. Onuru, Bloomberg. Mitt Romney is putting forward a wildly ambitious proposal to reorient the American welfare state toward children. The federal government transfers a hefty chunk of national income from younger people to the elderly. The Utah Republican senator wants more money to go to the parents of minor children. His plan would create a child allowance. Nearly all U.S. children, excluding only those from the highest earning households, would be allotted a monthly benefit worth $4,200 a year up to age 5 and $3,000 a year up to age 17. The plan is expensive. It would cost $66 billion a year more than the existing tax credit for children. Romney would pay for it in two principal ways: by folding several government benefits designed to help children, including that tax credit, into the new child allowance, and by wholly eliminating the deduction that lets people write off their state and local taxes against their federal ones. Just describing the plan should make obvious what some of the objections to it will be. Some progressives won't want to eliminate existing programs, such as temporary assistance for needy families, the main program that used to be called welfare, or the tax credit for daycare. President Joe Biden wants to expand that last credit as part of his COVID relief bill. Democrats want a bigger state and local deduction, too, not a smaller one. The proposal is raising concerns even among those conservatives who have been open to expanding the tax credit for children. Republican Senators Marco Rubio of Florida and Mike Lee of Utah have been advocating tax relief for parents for years. Romney's plan, however, gives benefits to some households in excess of any federal taxes they pay. That's too generous for the senators. Other Republicans are sure to attack the plan as a net tax increase. Anti-tax conservatives have supported efforts to eliminate tax breaks, including the state and local deduction, but only in return for tax cuts that are at least as big. The trade-off for higher average tax rates in this plan is more federal benefits. Conservative welfare policy analysts, finally, will be concerned about the impact of the plan on workforce participation and marriage. TANF, which Romney would nix, requires many of its beneficiaries to work. The child allowance would not have that condition. Giving parents larger benefits could make it easier for them to avoid paid employment. Supporters of the Romney plan counter, however, that it would not punish people for making a paycheck or marrying someone who does. The child allowance would remain at the same level for families with no income, low income, or middling income, phasing out only for the highest earning households. The allowances would start to shrink for single filers making more than $200,000 and joint filers making more than $400,000, just like the current child credit. It differs in that way from the old welfare program that TANF replaced, and from many other government programs and tax breaks as well, which punish people for moving up the lowest rungs on the income ladder. The net effect of this plan on work and marriage will require further study, but the plan has some very considerable virtues, starting with the one that Romney highlights. It would substantially reduce poverty and drastically reduce extreme poverty, especially among children. It would simplify government programs and probably make them easier to administer. The Earned Income Tax Credit, for example, has a high rate of improper payments that is largely a result of the way it currently tries to help parents. Romney would incorporate its pro-family features into the new allowance and leave a stripped-down EITC that aimed only to reward work. It would also make it easier for people to start and expand their families. A lot of people, understandably, get nervous when people start talking about a role for government in countering the decline in U.S. birth rates. But a plan like Romney's is best considered not as a way of bribing people to change their preferences about how many children to have, but as a way of helping them to live out what they already want. For decades, the family size that American women say they want, on average, has been larger than what they have. By changing economic and social conditions somewhat, a child allowance could shrink the gap between what the demographers call ideal and actual birth rates. Romney's plan deserves praise for another reason. It breaks out of the increasingly sterile debate among Republicans that centers on former President Donald Trump. There are some Republicans who want to go back to a pre-Trump conservative orthodoxy that shortchanged families in its obsession with lowering marginal tax rates and other free market goals. There are other Republicans who, in practice, reduce the idea of a conservatism that works for lower income families to fealty to Trump's policies, or worse, to the man himself.
This is the obituary column, Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. Edward Kuchel. Edward Kuchel died on Sunday, January 24th, from complications from COVID-19. Ed was born on April 2, 1932, in the Black Hills country of Dante, South Dakota, to Albert and Mary Pospisil Kuchel. Ed is preceded in death by his parents, three brothers, one sister, and dear friends Ann and Chris Stallings. Visitation will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Tuesday, February 9th from 5 to 7 p.m. with a rosary at 6 p.m. Graveside burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Wednesday, February 10th at 3 p.m. John Richard Anderson. John Richard Anderson, born March 9, 1929 in Midland, Texas, marched gloriously into heaven on February 4, 2021. He married Barbara Clayton Anderson, March 26, 1951, in Hobbs, New Mexico. They had four children, Sally Anderson Bland, Mary Anderson Hutto, deceased, John Robert Anderson Keva, and Martha Anderson Riston. Bert. Rich and Barbara were blessed with 12 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be Sunday, February 7th at 3 to 5 p.m. at Nallie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at the Muleshoe Ranch Cemetery on Monday, February 8th at 2 p.m. and a memorial service will be held Tuesday, February 9th at 10:30 a.m. at Christ Church Anglican in Midland, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials to be sent to Haley Memorial Library and History, 1805 West Indiana Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Ranching Heritage Association, P.O. Box 43200, Lubbock, Texas, 79409. Borden County EMS, P.O. Box 342, Gale, Texas. Or Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road, Midland, Texas, 79705. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made to www.npwelch.com. Marian Anna Japp Chapel. Marian Anna Japp Chapel went on to meet her Savior on Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Marian was born on November 20, 1928, in Ganado, Texas, to Frank A. and Alvina Skirla Japp. She was preceded in death by her husband and infant son, James Dale, her parents and four brothers, Frank, Bill, Fred, and John Japp, also beloved son-in-law John Conley, and her grandson and great-grandson John and Gavin Cooper. She is survived by her son and wife, Gary and Nancy Chapel of Midland, a daughter, Deborah Conley of Brookhaven, Mississippi, and her youngest daughter and her husband, Donna and Mike Metcalf of Midland. Several sisters-in-law, Bernice Japp of Schertz, Texas, Rebecca Japp of Dickinson, Texas, and Nadine Japp of Beckley, West Virginia, and Sherlyn Chapel of Tyler, Texas, and numerous nieces and nephews whom she loved. She also had many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. The family received friends and family for visitation at Ellis Funeral Home on Monday, February 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. A family graveside service was held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Tuesday, February 9th at 11 a.m. with Elders Philip Conley and Elder James Conley officiating. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be given to Alamo Heights Baptist Church, Manor Park, Home Hospice, or the charity of your choice. Contact with family by mail is 107 Canyon Drive, Midland, Texas, 79703. Mitchell Mark Orr. Mitchell Mark Orr, born to O.B. and Nona Orr, October 3, 1954, in San Angelo, Texas. He is survived by his mother, Nona Orr Evans, and her husband, Robert, sister Carrie Orr Carpenter, and her husband, Larry, brother James Orr, three children, Shane Orr, Shelby Orr, and her husband, Micah Yarborough, and Robert Orr, two grandchildren, Robert Orr and Heather Orr, and niece McKenna Orr. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the Toole Community Food Pantry, P.O. Box 43175, Toole, Texas, 75143. Death notices. Linda Scarpelli. Linda Scarpelli, 79, of Midland, passed away February 7th. Memorial service will be held at 12 p.m. Friday, February 12th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Live streaming will be available at www.npwelch.com. Internet will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. Front page. Stop the spread, wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. ECISD to discuss Ector College prep. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County Independent School District Board of Trustees will hear several report items at their 6 p.m. workshop meeting today. The gathering will be in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. All visitors are required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing the building. All visitors are also required to wear a face mask. A presentation and discussion of a middle school turnaround partner, strategic plan quarterly update, development office presentation, and legislative update are among the items trustees will hear. Although the middle school is not specified in the agenda, ECISD Communications Officer Mike Adkins and Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support Alicia Siverson said in separate text messages that the board will be discussing Ector College Prep Success Academy. During its January 19th board meeting, trustees voted 6-1 to non-renew its contract with the Ector Success Academy Network. Board Member Carol Gregg dissented. Senate Bill 1882, passed by the Texas Legislature in 2017, provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school, institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities, the Texas Education Agency website says. Ector was in its fifth year of improvement required under state accountability standards. If it didn't come off the list, it could have faced closure, or the Texas Education Commissioner could appoint a board of managers over the whole district. ECISD partnered with CEO/Superintendent Robert Blash's Ector Success Academy Network as a way to stay sanctions from the Texas Education Agency for 2 years. In accordance with law, the board, quote, shall renew a charter performance contract only if the board finds that the campus charter has substantially fulfilled its obligations and met the performance standards in the contract and applicable law. From Tuesday night's January 19th board presentation, the campus met 6 of 24 academic goals set out in the performance agreement from 2018 through 2020 failed to meet generally accepted accounting standards for fiscal management, did not disclose a conflict of interest for services provided by the Charter Governing Board's president in June 2020 until November 2020. Per the agreement, notice of non-renewal must be given by the ECISD Board of Trustees by the last Friday of January, the recap said. On the net, tinyurl.com/v88bicu8. Previous coverage, tinyurl.com/ytl57eb7. Challenging times. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Dr. Bonnie Kartner, MD, poses for a photo in her office Wednesday afternoon at Complete Care North. Practicing Medicine During COVID, Challenging, by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Dr. Bonnie Carter has been in practice for about 17 years, but this about the craziest time she has seen. Recently, Carter switched from Medical Center to Complete Care North, associated with Odessa Regional Medical Center, and located at 980 87th Street in Odessa. Carter said she arrived in November 2020. Carter, who provides family medicine, has been practicing in Odessa for 4 years and has family in Midland. The hospital is happy to have Carter aboard. We are proud to have Dr. Carter join our care team at Steward Medical Group, said Stacy Brown, president of Odessa Regional Medical Center, in an email. Our patients will benefit from Dr. Carter's skills and expertise, as well as her commitment to providing care for patients of all ages in the community. She observed that the COVID-19 pandemic is unprecedented territory. The thing with COVID is there's so much we don't know, and every day it's constantly changing. And due to social media, there's been an abundance of information, not always an abundance of correct information, because every day there's some new thing that somebody's saying there's a silver bullet that hasn't been the silver bullet, Carter said. We get a lot of people coming in asking for specific therapies. Most of the time we get people coming in saying, oh, it can't be COVID, it's just my allergies. It's just sinuses. It's COVID. COVID doesn't act like a typical flu bug. I've seen people not have symptoms. I've seen people have loss of taste and smell, seen shortness of breath, cough, cold, Carter said. She added that she's not seeing as much fever now as she did in the spring. Every day there's changing in guidelines or recommendations to testing to telehealth, Carter said. In the past, telehealth was rare, but it has become much more common during the pandemic. It is challenging, though, because Carter said you can't listen or examine a patient. You're mostly relying on what they're telling you. In some stuff, that's okay, but in a lot of stuff, it's not. People have been scared to come to the doctor, so there's been a lot of fear. We've seen people delay well-child exams because they didn't want to come in. I've had patients that couldn't get imaging studies or mammograms back in the spring when it first started, and they shut everything down. I've had people delay those exams just for fear of not wanting to go to the hospital, Carter said. She added that some specialists were not accepting new patients as well. It's been an adventure, to say the least. Not to mention we have definitely been busy. We do COVID testing out here. We've been seeing healthy patients in the morning as far as our routine follow-ups, like diabetes, hypertension. Then we do the sick upper respiratory symptoms in the afternoon to try and keep well people well and not expose them, Carter said. She added that they conduct a lot of COVID tests in the afternoon and have seen a lot of positives. You also have to deal with and face the fear of getting sick. There's been a lot of doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, and nurse practitioners that have gotten sick and then died of this throughout the country. So that's definitely in the back of your mind. There's a lot of anxiety about bringing it home to our families, not just us getting sick, but the potential of exposing our families and bringing it to them. So that's been a challenge, Carter said. Along with healthcare providers, she said patients are more anxious and depressed because of a combination of economics, fear of getting sick, and fear of family members getting sick. There are also people in nursing homes or assisted living that cannot see their families due to COVID. That affects their overall health, she said. You see a decline in their overall health because of the anxiety and depression. It's not just limited to people who had pre-existing anxiety and depression. I see a whole lot of new anxiety and depression, people that previously didn't have problems, Carter said. In addition to being worried about people putting off routine diagnoses, Carter said one of the things medical professionals saw early on was people not going to the emergency room with heart attacks and strokes. They were coming in too late to intervene, and they were seeing more people coming in DOA because they delayed going in with the chest pain because of fear of COVID, she said. It's a weird disease, Carter said, because you can have 10 patients the same age and have 10 different courses of the disease and 10 different outcomes. With flu, everyone has the same type of presentation. COVID is all over the place, and we're seeing now the repercussions of people that have had COVID that have lingering issues like heart issues, lung issues, some neurologic issues. We don't fully understand what kind of permanent damage that's going to cause. We're seeing people where it almost looks like asthma. They have continued shortness of breath and get shortness of breath with exertion. I've had people with headaches, like migraine headaches, she said. There have also been patients with persistent loss of taste and smell. Some people got it back, but maybe not completely. Pneumonia has been associated with COVID. There are the ones that get really, really sick and wind up in the hospital with COVID pneumonia and other symptoms. We don't see that as much. Around 2 weeks in, they are having persistent shortness of breath and cough, and their oxygen levels are low, but not low like they need to be in the hospital, Carter said. What we see is people coming back at 90 to 91% still having shortness of breath. You do a chest x-ray and it's pneumonia. A typical bacterial pneumonia looks like a wedge shape on an x-ray. It's an area of what we call consolidation. The infected lung is full of infection, white blood cells, pus. The air sacs get full of the secretions. What we see with COVID is you actually see patchy, fluffy infiltrates that are throughout the lung in all lung fields. A typical pneumonia, when I listen, I can hear a pneumonia. People often have what we call rails or crackles when we listen. You often hear wheezing. With COVID, you don't hear that. COVID, you listen and it sounds clear. You may hear diminished air sounds, but you don't hear the typical crackles and rails that you normally hear. Many times I've seen someone who looks normal, other than the trouble breathing and their oxygen level being lower, and then you do an x-ray and it looks horrible. Again, it didn't read the book, Carter said. ORMC website, tinyurl.com/2. TNRDXT5. Booster vaccines begin February 15th at Urgent Cares. OA News at OAOA.com. While the COVID-19 vaccine first doses will still be available at Ratliff Stadium this Wednesday and Thursday, MCH officials say the booster or second shot will be administered starting Monday at urgent care clinics by appointment only. The second shot is for those who received the first shot at Ratliff Stadium during the last few weeks. Medical Center Health System has created a process for the community to receive their booster, second doses, shots of the Pfizer vaccines given at Ratliff Stadium, a news release details. The first booster shots will be available starting on Monday for those who received the first shot at Ratliff Stadium. Odessans can call 432-640-2747. That's 432-640-2747. That number is answered Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., which are also the same times to get the second shot at the urgent cares, located at either 6030 West University Boulevard or 3001 JBS Parkway. Those who need the booster must call and set an appointment within their 5-day range, which is listed on the vaccination card. No booster shots will be given to patients before the first date listed on their card. If patients can't make the 5-day range on the card, they can still make an appointment after those dates. MCHS is also asking the community to only show up for their appointment a few minutes before their allotted time to avoid a crowd in the waiting room and to ensure the most efficient process possible. There will be no walk-ins for the booster shot. Monday's total COVID numbers for MCHS, along with the daily COVID in-house census as of 1:45 p.m., are 49 COVID patients in-house, 0 PUIs in-house, also 24 critical care patients, 8 of those in CCU overflow in WSMP. There are 20 COVID patients vented, with 23 on 4. Central patient list includes 2 from Focused Care Odessa, 2 from the Parks Odessa, 2 from Crane, 1 from Stanton. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering the first dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at the drive-thru clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. The clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates close at 2 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, and tentatively open on Friday only if vaccines remain. These dates/times are subject to change/cancellation due to the extremely cold temperatures. Dates for the second doses of the vaccine will be announced soon, which will not be administered at Ratliff. The clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B most at risk, and for ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for a quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short-sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessa-tx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549. That's 432-582-8549. Or visit tinyurl.com/y3jqhz 1-800-273-8789. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. For eligibility requirements or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. Midland Health appoints new Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. OA Life at OAOA.com. Midland. Midland Health appointed Samuel Moore as the new Vice President and Chief Financial Officer in February. Moore fills the vacancy as Stephen Bowerman was promoted to Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. Moore is joining the team from the University of Kansas Health System, St. Francis Campus in Topeka, Kansas, where he has served as Vice President and Chief Financial Officer for the past 3.5 years. Prior to that, he held CFO roles in Florida and Oklahoma. He got his start in healthcare in 2010 at BSA Health System in Amarillo, where he served in financial leadership roles within the organization. Prior to entering the healthcare field, he worked in public accounting and auditing in both Lubbock and Amarillo. Moore received his certified public accountant license in Texas in 2008 and holds a master's degree in finance and accounting. Moore and his wife of 18 years, Kelly, moved to Amarillo after marrying and have 3 children, Thaddeus, 15, Ezekiel, 12, and Sela, 10. Odessa American for Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. OAOA.com. Local News Roundup. ECRW Luncheon. Ector County Republican Women has scheduled a luncheon February 17th at the Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. VIP patron meet and greet will be at 10:30 a.m. and lunch will be served from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Guest speaker will be Apostle Claver Kamaimani, a self-described ultra-conservative, as the founder, president, and CEO of Raging Elephants Radio, LLC. RagingElephantsRadio.com is a digital media company that focuses primarily on Texas political, economic, and cultural news. To pre-register, $25 for the luncheon, visit tinyurl.com/46885ACR. Tickets at the door, $30. Concert. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale has scheduled Marvelous Melodies, a virtual family concert, at 7 p.m. February 18th on Basin PBS. Visit www.mosc.org or www.basinpbs.org. Reduce, reuse campaign. Keep Odessa Beautiful are accepting gently used items at the Household Hazardous Waste Facility, 814 West 42nd Street. Items collected will be donated to local nonprofit organizations. Items can consist of coffee tables, small appliances, bedroom furniture, end tables, lamps, dressers, cabinets, books, or dining room furniture. Items may be dropped off from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. When dropping off, tag KOB on social media for a chance to enter a drawing for a prize at Keep Odessa Beautiful or email pictures to kob@odessa-tx.gov. OA News at OAOA.com. Commissioners view illegal dumping. New district judges bring requests for staff pay hikes. OA News at OAOA.com. Trash cleanup action and bolstering the Ector County criminal justice system will be taken up today by the County Commissioner's Court. In a 10 a.m. session in the Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner will propose buying 5 roll-off dumpsters to be strategically placed around the west side of the county to make it more convenient for citizens to dispose of their trash, thereby reducing illegal dumping. Gardner will also seek the court's approval to transfer 2 full-time employees from the Road and Bridge Department to Environmental Enforcement for them to pick up trash in the $266,938 grapple truck that will be delivered in April. In other business, the commissioners will hear the requests of recently impaneled district judges Justin Lowe and John Schrode and new county attorney Greg Barber to raise the pay of a bailiff, 2 court administrators, and an investigator from step 1 to step 4 based on experience. The county's pay scale calls for steps 1 and 4 for a bailiff to be $24.93 and $28.05 per hour, for a court administrator to be $18.21 to $20.49, and for a county attorney's investigator to be $23.65 and $26.60. Lowe presides in the 161st District Court and Schrode in the 358th. County Judge Debbie Hayes will lead the court's biweekly review of COVID-19-related concerns. The commissioners will also consider Lowe's request for $4,090 to buy equipment and furniture, discuss applying to the governor's office for victims coordinator and liaison grants for the county attorney's and district attorney's offices, set specifications for seal coat aggregate, graded base material, water, asphalt patching material, and liquid asphalt emulsion for highways and streets improvements. Consider approving documentation to continue the county's eminent domain authority. Hear District Clerk Clarissa Webster's recommendation on a proposal from Cofile Technologies of Dallas for the archival digitization of records. Consider accepting a Phase 1 certificate of substantial completion for the Law Enforcement Center's booking and intake area. Hear Sheriff's Information Technology Specialist Stephen White's proposal to amend the county's end user and professional services agreement with Tyler Technologies of Lubbock and add 11 Odyssey online users, including city fire marshals.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.